Okay.
What we did in the last session was just introduce ourselves.
Yeah,
My name is Deborah Anderson. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan. I've been in the world since 2008, and I'm a community
My name is Kaylee Falls. I am a New Orleans native, raised in the Ninth Ward. And I am a baker and songwriter.
My name is Imani Jacqueline Brown. I'm a New Orleans native. Lived in New York for 7 years and came back in 2013. I'm a cultural organizer.
Hey, my name is Chill. I'm a NOLA native and I produce musicals.
My name is Malik Bartholomew. I am a New Orleans native. I'm also a photographer as well as a historical researcher and consultant.
We still exist.
This is like our first and like
table.
I know this is like the first setting I have been in since coming back to New Orleans, where there's a majority New Orleans natives.
I'm waiting on somebody to say, I'm from San Francisco.
You know, people are like, oh my gosh, you're from here?
Right.
That's so rare.
That's so exotic.
That's so rare. I'm like, we're in my hometown.
Wait, were you here for Katrina?
Should we pick a card and then we talk about it and then we go back and like deal them a little
bit? I'm gonna drink, but
I'm down for that. I mean, come on, use that other time.
Okay. What you need?
So we're gonna do the cards, questions one by one. We're gonna open it up.
You need me to throw it away?
Yeah. Wait, can we pause for like literally 2 seconds?
And the Grammy goes to.
We'll just get another plate.
Okay, we're gonna shuffle up the cards. I'm gonna wait for him to come back because you know I wanna. Go get something to eat, get something to drink. You know.
Is this my?
Sit right here. Make sure that before everyone talks, you introduce yourself.
Yeah. And then you can also introduce yourself when we ask questions. Who's that, Mike? Bro? Do you want to go get something to eat before we start? Yeah. So I'm talking to everybody. He's like, yeah.
Go do that.
I won't get in the conversation. Like, finish up this curry.
Time to grab a drink. Okay, I'm ready to discuss.
I wonder how good the mic is. Is it picking up on everything that we're saying? I'm sure it can. Should be able to project.
Yeah. If I can hear you, then that can hear us. It projects good enough. So. I mean, we're on two more people.
Did they say you were going to have to? I have to.
We're on two more people.
Yes.
So should we?
We're going to wait on the.
Michael and Maya can card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we can. And then Mike, they can introduce themselves.
Mm-hmm. They're here.
She always looks so cute.
Mike always comes like just A1. Fashion sense impeccable.
Yes.
Are you doing the, are you going to do the next bike ride?
I'm gonna try to make it whenever they do it, yeah.
Well, I think it's on the 20th. The only problem is that's Super Sunday. So I don't know if we're going to be bike riding
that
too.
That would be dope.
The second line?
We do like bike rides.
Yeah, on a Sunday.
Wait, is that
with the
no mail?
Was that,
are you talking about the no mail thing? Because I saw somebody biking to a second line.
Okay. It's with the away team.
What?
The Rockaway. DJ Rockaway and the away team. Yeah. So he hosts like a monthly bike ride throughout the city.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's cute. Yeah. That's dope. Yeah. I like that. I just got a bike, y'all. So.
Well, come on now. Yeah.
I got a bike.
Yo, come on now. You know what I'm saying? So we meet up at St. Paul, yeah.
I get a bike.
You official.
Huh?
So you official now.
I'm a what?
You official.
Official. Yeah.
Biking is so fun.
And I was talking to my shit when that stuff first came down. I was like, bikes. oh, like, wait, I'm a biker.
Now you like, get out of my way, car. Like,
I'm just like, oh, I know how to navigate it. I'm like, I already know what this car about to do, so I'm gonna slow down.
And you see, you gotta be smart, because when you're in New Orleans, you know what bike lanes not to use. We're like, this is really a street lane or bike lane, so you don't want to get hit. Get on the side, get that sidewalk.
Exactly.
Because you can't be using a bike lane out on this street.
Yeah.
Hanging on napkins, that's one major flaw. You have some extra napkins? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
No problem. I always come prepared.
Good luck.
I'm all about this roll.
Just so good. Like, so good.
Dude, you're not getting started in a conversation I could have left behind. Like they talk.
We just, everybody need a discussion already.
They coming?
You can tell we from New Orleans. Everybody started their discussion.
And we like,
ah! It's gonna get down. It's gonna get down.
Like, this is the natives table.
Right.
Okay.
This is the big easy table.
We take it nice and easy.
So, Mike, are we waiting on somebody else?
No, Mike's going at the other table. But introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Say your name, what you do.
Yeah, where you from?
Okay, my name is Michael Stucky.
Sultan?
Sultan, that's my title. No Mr. or Mrs. Sultan. I grew up in Virginia, New Violence.
Cool, what's up? So we got these calls. You can feel free to, we got these cards. We're supposed to discuss each of these topics on a card. I think I should shuffle it up or what?
Shuffle it up, yeah.
You play pity patter spade.
I can't do that.
Yeah, because you know the people be.
I can't do that. I mean, I can do a little.
You know, I was the person in high school. Was like, nah, I'm not playing cards.
Like, everybody used to be like, you can't play spade. You're not black.
Oh, you can just shuffle up. It's good to have a little random mix in there.
Well, yeah.
What's the blank card
like,
for?
If you want to
add a question.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, these aren't real cards, so it's hard to check.
Yeah, I'm like.
So the first card says.
Oh, it looks so real.
Bob. Oh, this is a great one. Discuss the impact on a tourist economy on the cultural economy. Come on now. So discuss the impact on a tourist economy on a cultural economy.
We went to a bounce show. Katie Rev, Big Frito, and Vacari Doo. Some like
Vacari Doo.
You know, some like
you said
dope. Vacari? Yeah, Vacari
Doo.
Yeah, Vacari Doo. And when I tell you, it was the paciest thing I've ever witnessed in my life. But I could tell they made like a lot of money with it. But to see that culture watered down to like just no soul, no nothing, was like, it was hard to see. It was my first time witnessing gentrification, or even like on a social level. Like, whoa, this is what happens when like people, pretty much like people, and they almost look at it like it's theirs. Like, even though nobody was dancing, it was the kind of atmosphere. It's like, whoa, this belongs to us. Like, what are you doing here? You're an outsider.
They paid for it.
Well, hold up. I'm giving you the side eye when you say it like they was theirs. I was like,
it was like.
Well, that's the attitude, you know. It's like when you have like this like capitalist culture coming in, where it's like, you know, New Orleans, like neoliberalism like came really slowly here, and it's because we had all of these like the cultural economy was like its own thing, and it was its own like insulated thing within like various neighborhoods and within the culture. So like a culture supports itself and it supports its own people through like, you know, you like go like from black-owned business to black-owned business, you know, and like that kind of thing. Versus like now the cultural economy is something that's being extracted you know, by people who want to profit off of it, and the profits are not going to the people who are actually producing it.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that.
That's perfect.
Well, in the past, I was at the discussion, but I say the problem is people value Black New Orleans culture, but they do not value Black New Orleans.
Right, at all.
And that is problematic, and we have to, and sometimes, and honestly, sometimes other outside people appreciate our culture more than we do because we grow up in it. So we look at it like it's an everyday thing.
We take it for granted.
So they take it. It's like the, it's like somebody, like a big predominant institution here has a hip hop cultural archives of New Orleans hip hop. Okay, it's like, so what are you doing studying, you know, our culture? Like, you, that's not yours. But somebody saw it and realized the importance of it and decided to archive it and study it.
Right.
So in a way, you can't really be upset, but you have to realize that we do have something precious here, and we have to put interest and value in it,
mm-hmm.
and not just allow outside people to do it.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like people come here to visit, and they like the New Orleans culture, and so they decide to move here, and then it's like they didn't realize what they were getting into, and
right.
realized that New Orleans is 24/7,
yeah.
and then they complain about
yeah.
New Orleans culture.
Right.
Yeah. But that's why you liked it, and
yeah.
you moved here, but now you're trying to change it.
Yeah.
Like,
really
people, for instance,
that's so annoying.
Yeah. Or be smart and learn the culture. You can't come here and say you love the culture and you just fell in love with the French part and stuff. And then, like you say, you move here. Like, we know, you don't move, like, you move on Frenchman or French Quarter. You plan, you say,
yeah.
you think you're going to stay up. You work at night.
You
don't
that.
Go to sleep. Think, oh, I can't get no rest. You moved on Frenchman.
Right.
We didn't
right.
tell you to move. We know not to move on Frenchman.
Set your ass to Metairie.
That's why Metairie is there.
No, Metairie. Gentilly, some parts of Bywater. Like,
right.
you, but don't move in the quarters and complain about the noise.
It will move
exactly.
right next to it. Oh, this seems like a nice place to move where there's loud music.
Just because you have the money, that don't mean, you know, so you have to really understand a place. Like, people who live like if you live on Frenchman, you're telling me you have a job that you stay up all night.
Right.
And you
right.
sleep most of the time during the day.
Exactly.
Because I wouldn't live on Frenchman and complain about the noise at 8, 9 o'clock at night.
No.
Something that's interesting, like, I met somebody who has a restaurant here who's also from Detroit, like me, and she was talking about her grandson and how her daughter or son was correcting her grandson on how he was pronouncing things, and she was like, no, don't correct him, because you're about to have, he needs to be involved in New Orleans culture, because this is where he's growing up and living. You can't, so just because they pronounce it Burgundy, like,
yeah.
that's how they pronounce.
No, that's the word. The word is Burgundy and Calliope. It is Calio.
It's Calio.
And Tropatula is, it ain't Top of Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But she was like, don't mess him up just
because
he pronounced it differently from where he's from. He needs to be in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Mike.
We have our own language.
That's what I'm saying.
I co sign on all of that. And also, I mean, I'm not from New Orleans, and I'm not trying to act like I am either, but, so I just feel like my position would just be like, okay, listen, even though I don't feel like I'm doing that,
yeah.
it's not my space to really complain about that.
Well, I mean, but it's the same, it's not speaking specifically about New Orleans,
right?
Right,
and it's not just New Orleans, but
yeah.
it happens everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It is everywhere,
yeah.
but I think when, you know, people from New Orleans are talking about it, I feel like y'all should talk about it.
Right.
So. That's why I'm just like,
that's
yeah.
fair.
To group consensus, let me know.
I mean,
okay.
but like, it is the same. Like, if you, like, look at New York and the history of New York, like, that shit is happening here.
Yeah,
that's why everyone
thing.
Is, like, coming down here from
people
New York.
Complaining about the same thing.
Because it's like, yeah, like, New York is no longer hospitable to artists. And it used
no.
to be, like, a pioneer for actually, like, a lot of the rent control was actually created by artists organizing, like, you know, within their neighborhood
right.
and making sure that they could afford to stay there. And, like, when you were in, like, Soho today, which has been totally, like, commercialized, it's all shopping, it's all, like, high-end, like, nasty, just, like, horrible place. But, like...
Well, that's what they're trying to do to buy water.
Exactly.
So.
But, like, when you also, like, I used to work for an arts organization in that neighborhood and, like, knew a lot of, like, old artists, like, artists who, like, bought their, like, loft, like, back in the 70s or, like, had rent control and are paying, like, $200 a month for, like, a full floor. So it's like now, like, the city's trying to, like, push them out because investment bankers want to move in and that whole situation.
That's
but like
crazy.
All of those people now that, like, New York can no longer, like, artists can't survive there, so everyone comes here because they're, like, you know, fleeing from, like, the complete destruction and collapse of, like, of culture in New York.
Isn't that kind of like
some of them, I feel like whites and also people of color are doing the same thing down here.
Like, because it's so like it's so just like unintentional, and it's just like people need to like be very like, we have to be having more conversations about like how like our body impacts like the environment that we're in, how like every like step that we take like impacts the ground and like, you know, shakes the foundation. Like, we can talk about systems, but we can't talk about our own complicity in that system.
So we have another person in the discussion. I want to introduce herself and where you're from and what do you do.
Hi, my name is Valerian Angelin. I am a teacher, educator, I'll say, not
and
teacher. And I also run a food project called Brown Girl Kitchen.
She cooked the food.
I cooked the food, you guys.
Yes, Brown Girl Kitchen. She do catering parties, pop-ups.
Lots of things. And I'm from here. I grew up in the lower ninth ward.
Come on now. Got another ninth ward girl right here.
And I live in the ninth ward now.
I need to get in the ninth ward before I ain't the ninth ward no more.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Hey, they're gonna change the name.
So
it's gonna be Upper River Community.
I'm talking about across the
canal is gonna be the Upper River Community.
Yeah.
That's
no,
what's
me neither.
Called.
Oh,
I always
see the
ninth ward.
Like when
people
ask me where I live, I'm like,
is. It's like, they don't know lower to what? It's just lower.
They don't know about that across that canal line. You don't know about that cross that canal. Right?
No, when you come over the bridge, because I live off of Poland, and when you come over the bridge, there is a sign right there,
right.
And it says Bywater. And every time I walk past that sign, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
So
that's so funny.
So we're going to move on to the next card. Let me see. I love this one. What keeps you in New Orleans? Are you from here? Why did you stay?
Okay. That's a good question.
So what keeps you in New Orleans? I'm going to say, are you from here? I would say probably like a 6th or 7th generation New Orleanian. My last name is Bartholomew. Of course, my family go back really far in New Orleans. My dad, his dad is all from New Orleans. New Orleans, despite the harshness of the reality that we live, is a place that is special. It is a place that, New Orleans is not just a place, it's who we are as a people, as a culture, the music, the language. We live life in a different way. It's just so hard to put into words. I've seen poets and other people put it better into words, but it's just such a beautiful place. Well, you know, yeah. But why do I stay? You know, after Hurricane Katrina, even to this day, I have withdrawals that I can't go to my mama's house anymore. Like, I literally, like, my mama don't stay in New Orleans anymore. That freaks me out that I can't, in between my job, go and get some of my mama food for my mama house. And I'm like, why do you still stay in Texas? But it also grieves me because I was like, that's something I did not realize, that my mama stayed here, my grandmother stayed in Carrollton 5 minutes away,
everywhere.
My auntie stayed 3 minutes away. I didn't know that I was that connected to family until after Katrina. I had no idea. And now that family is all over, it's very foreign. So one of the things, especially in New Orleans was a, it was a center of families. Like, we literally had, some families had owned the whole block.
Right.
Like, Roma had a house, TT had a house.
Yes.
And you can't find it nowhere else.
Yes.
So it really pains me that, you know, that, but I stay here because this is home. I'm looking to buy a home here because I'd be damned. Everybody buy a piece of property in New Orleans but me. And I just really want to give back to the place that developed my family. And I know there's no place like it, and I hope that the culture, the food, the music continues, you know.
It will.
That is so funny that you say that. I mean, I guess I should answer this question. Yes, I'm from here. What keeps me here? Why do I stay? I have not figured my next move yet. I love New Orleans. I intend one day to return to New Orleans after spending time elsewhere. But there are certain endeavors of mine that I would like to go out. Like, for example, for the food project. New Orleans is a very big food city, but we don't have a lot of the, like, higher end of food or, like, higher, like, sort of, like, elevated art style of food. Like, we have no Michelin-starred restaurants. There's none in the state of Louisiana. There's none in the South at all. Michelin-starred. There's no Michelin-starred restaurants in the South. I'm trying to remember if Atlanta has one. The closest one is Chicago, New York, obviously all of those things. And just wanting to, like, put myself in other cultures. So I do intend to leave at some point, but I also intend to come back.
Make sure you buy your house before you leave.
I probably need to before I can't afford to come back.
Yeah, right.
But it's funny that you say that about people whose family owned the whole block and this like idea of loss of home, because it took me about 5 years after Katrina for me to realize that basically I experienced the same thing. When I was growing up in the Lower Ninth Ward, I grew up on Lizardia Earth Court. I lived in a shotgun double, two-bedroom shotgun double. My mom, my dad, and my like six-plus siblings. We were clearly broke as fuck. Pardon my language, y'all. And my cousins lived on the other side of the duplex, and then I had cousins that lived directly next door to me on the other side. My grandfather lived behind me, like on the next street behind me, and then it rotated. Each of my aunts each lived in that house at one point. And then I had an aunt that lived closer to Chalmette, my uncle on my father's side over there. Like, literally, I couldn't have tripped and fell anywhere in the Ninth Ward without my parents hearing about it, like, 3 minutes later. And so, and it's also, like, kind of a close thing, because my grandfather, I have aunts and uncles that are younger than me. So, like, these aunts and uncles were, like, my age. So it was, like, me and all my cousins and my aunts and uncles who I'm older than them. So I'm, like, your cousin, you know, your cousin status, you know, but, like, we all just, like, grew up together, and we're just, like, here, and we have all these memories and all these different things, and it wasn't until, yeah, 5 years later that I ended up taking, like, a super long walk from, like, Canal Street all the way back through, or I was coming up through the Ninth Ward, and I was just, like, passing by all these places, and just, like, thinking about all these different memories, and I was, like, damn, like, a lot of my family, some of them have started to move back. My favorite cousin lives in Texas now.
Yeah.
She hasn't come back. My grandmother, like, they all live, like, far out on the West Bank because, like, the rising prices in New Orleans have already displaced them.
Yeah.
Like, there's nowhere that they can afford to live in the city. And so it's, like, Chalmette, or not Chalmette, but, like, Boutie, Harvey, like, all these, like, really far out West Bank places. My parents live in West Wego. They bought a house there post-Katrina. Or circa around the time of Katrina. I mean, my parents live there because I have a huge family. I have four younger siblings and four older siblings. And we didn't all always live in the same house together, but it's always, like, it's always been at least, like, five, six kids, and
exactly.
Then my parents. And then right now, my father's brother and his brother's friend live with my parents as well. And so they needed lots of space. And so that's where they could get lots of space cheaply. But it's, like, they all live there. Like, you can't get to any of those places unless you have a car. Like, it's not like we, like, see each other every day or, like, literally, like, my cousin might as well have, like, lived in my house when I was a kid because she lived directly next door. Like, we were just always together. And so we just, like, don't have that anymore, and you don't see them. We get together on holidays, and we do it real big, but it's not the same thing.
And who remembers just, like, going out, like, when it was, like, young and just everybody outside?
Mm-hmm.
Just, like,
yeah, like
the whole neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about the hood. That is the thing about the hood. If I go outside on my street at 6 p.m., 7 p.m., ain't nobody outside. Back on the hood, everybody else. The park was full, like, the lights were on, everybody and their mom, their grandma, like, everybody was just, like, outside chilling. And you knew everybody. Like, from my corner, which was, like, Earth Court, going up to St. Claude, there wasn't a single person on that street who, like, didn't know who I was and whose kid I was.
Shit. I love New, like, to me, like, New Orleans is, like, a mecca for, like, black people and art. For, like, freedom of expression, there's, like, no other place I would rather be. Like, I'm into theater, and, like, the opportunity to, like, express yourself, like, on an underground level, and, like, you know, I can't explain. I really think, like, New Orleans is, like, on the brink of, like, an artistic revolution.
I think that is, like, really, like, creative energy flows very freely here, and there's just, like, so many, like, there's so many people to meet, and you do have, like, a lot of opportunities. And I just feel like it's easier to make projects happen here.
And one thing I kind of realized, too, is, like, just yesterday I realized this. It's like, y'all can travel the world and go to one country and learn a different language, or I can, like, stay here, you know, I'll stay here and meet somebody who, like, knows, you know, different languages. I met, like, so many people, like, just yesterday who, like, spoke different languages and, like, they want to live here now. So it's, like, that's cool, too. It's definitely like, a combo in a sense where it's just, like,
combo pie. It's like, all right, more people.
Yeah,
right,
because mix that shit up. You in the mix now, you know what I'm saying?
Right?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Keep mixing that shit up. So I'm with it.
It's so funny. I had a conversation with Ayo Scott. We were talking about energy, and the energy of New Orleans, and a creative energy. Mm-hmm. And because it seems like now everybody is singing, painting, taking pictures, and, you know, creating. And there's a reason why that's happening.
So,
doing theater, cooking, like, it's just like, yeah, so.
We be cooking.
I mean, I'm sitting here, like, looking at Chill's, like, buku, like, bracelet. And I just, like, you know, there are so many, I'm from New Orleans, and, you know, there are so many elements of, like, growing up in New Orleans that are just, like, deeply embedded in you that you, like, think are, that you just totally take for granted and you assume everywhere else, like, before you really have a chance to live anywhere else, you assume, oh, well, like, yeah, that's just how it is everywhere else. So, like, buku is one thing. It's like, oh, we have all of these French words, like, interwoven within our vocabulary, but we don't even think of them as being French. And, like, growing up, I just, like, even though I took French from, like, you know, kinder, like, the
entire
time.
That is so true. It wasn't until I moved to Boston and I said buku, I was like, oh, people don't just know.
Yeah, so that's, like, you know, it's like you, exactly, so, yeah. That's what I was gonna say, is that, you know, it's like I just always grew up thinking like buku was spelled B-U-K-U or maybe B-O-O, like C-O. I was like, I don't know what this word is. Yeah. And then finally it took me like literally to leave New Orleans and go and live somewhere else and be like,
you know how to spell it.
Oh, that's French. And like I would always say like, oh, buku, and it's like, no, that's the same word. And I had a conversation with someone the other day about like, so we know that like the neutral ground, like there was a New York Times like linguistics study that came out, like looking at like where it like basically like gave you all these like, you know, like questions about like what you call different things, and it told you where you probably lived. And like I was like dead center, like hot red on New Orleans. And there are like phrases and words that we use here that no one else uses. So everyone else says median.
Yeah,
only here. This is the only place in this country that says neutral ground.
Yeah. Right.
But then growing up, even hearing, like, I wouldn't ever say neutral ground. It was like neutral ground.
Neutral.
And then you would have, like, the nutria. And you would say, and then you would say nutra rat. And then you would have the nutra grain bar. And so I just, like, literally my entire, like, up
it took
until,
me a
like,
really
I
long
left
time
New Orleans.
To know that the Nutri-Ground was neutral ground.
Neutral.
Like, I was probably, like, upper age of
And it's like, I, like, literally thought it was, like, the same root word for, like, neutral ground,
neutral ground. It's all the same.
Like, until, like, really recently. And it's funny, and it's just like, oh, like, of course, like, at some level, I actually knew that that wasn't, but I just never questioned it.
Yeah, you just, like, don't think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, festival culture is another thing as well, because, like, festival culture, costuming, like, other people are just, like, not doing that.
Oh, yeah, Mardi Gras, you know.
Like, Mardi Gras costuming festivals, like, people don't have that.
When I was living in Houston, it was Mardi Gras Day, and I couldn't make it here. It was right, it was, like, 2007. So, oh, my God, I can't make it, this other. So, I was just, like, I told my boss, I said, I can't come to work. It's Mardi Gras Day. I'm not going to work. So I cannot do this. Yeah. I said that. And I literally went to Walmart. Bought liquor, bought patent hot sausage. I cooked red beans, patent hot sausage.
That's so good.
I made fried chicken. I did a whole lot. I wrote everybody I knew from New Orleans. I invited them there because I knew they was missing home. It's Mardi Gras Day. Mm-hmm. You don't go to work on Mardi Gras Day.
No, you go to all the
And I literally, and everybody who left out my house, with a plate of red beans and a hot sausage. After they ate, they left out with red beans and a hot sausage. Somebody was like, man, I really needed this, and the other. Because, you know, and then when I realized that New Orleans is a spirit, and we take it with us wherever we go.
It's true.
And so it's a spirit more than just
it's
a spirit.
It's like a playful and very joyful spirit. Like, I will say, first and foremost, when I lived in Boston.
And it would get real serious quick.
It can definitely get real serious real quick. I'll tell y'all a different story about that. But when I was in Boston, like, I just would walk around smiling because, like, that's what I do.
Yeah, I'll say hello.
And, like, or say hello. And I'd had multiple people while I was living there comment upon it, like, oh, like, you just, like, have this, like, energy or, like, whatever. And I was like, I'm not mad about my life.
Pass that old lady house on a shotgun and I tell a little chef, Miss Mary Carl said you ain't say hello to her.
Right.
You need to go walk back.
Go back to the end of the block.
Like, she said you getting sad. She said you need to say.
It's like I'm trying to find like the accurate word to describe New Orleans spirit. Like, I want to say playful, but like there's something like very playful and very honest and very very just like expressive. Like not even
free,
just like positively expressive, but just like
it's
expressive.
Grounded.
Yeah.
Like this like city and like, you know, in terms of like why I'm here and why I stay here. So I like left like when Katrina hit. I evacuated for Katrina, and was furious when we evacuated because my friend was having, you know, like a little, she always had these luau parties that always coincided with like the hurricane. And we would always evacuate and there would never be a hurricane. But I'm like, for some reason, I remember like I was like pissed off about missing the party, but there was like also this like weird, there was like a different energy around like when Katrina came, you know, that wasn't the same as every other like hurricane.
Yeah,
I like packed like a huge suitcase.
Yeah, I was kind of ready.
And my mom was like, you can't bring all of that because it was like me and my mom and my grandfather and his wife and like their dog and my three birds. And then we were like going to meet other family to pick them up. And she was like, you can't bring all of that. And like for some reason, I was like in this panic state of like, I have to take everything, you know, and like that had never happened before. But like, so I evacuated and then like went to this horrible place in Maryland, which like is actually really important, I think, for me because I like actually saw what the rest of like America is.
Yeah,
like.
It is so easy to forget.
Like, yeah, like because I didn't know. And even though like my dad always lived in D.C., so like I would always travel to D.C. and go back and forth. But to live with those people and to go to school with them. Yeah. And like, you know, I was at this place. I was in Potomac, Maryland, which is like one of the wealthiest counties like in the country, and like thankfully like my two best friends from Franklin like went up there with me and we all got scholarships, and we're like the only people on scholarship at that school were obviously all the people who were there on sports scholarships, and those were also the only other black people at that school,
of course.
And it was just like such, I mean, but it's such a rude awakening when you like live like in this like, I mean, like, my experience of New Orleans was very deeply integrated, and my experience of New Orleans now is a lot more segregated, I think, than, like, even when I grew up here. Yeah. And it kind of,
I mean, I think to a certain extent, like, with all of the changes that are happening and what people bringing that spirit with them from the places that they're come, when you're talking about, like, transplant culture, like, that's one of the effects of it,
yeah,
because
right,
those folks are not socialized to interact with everybody,
right.
Like, people say what they want to say about the South and how it's like, oh, so racist or whatever. I feel like personally growing up in New Orleans, I would take New Orleans racism over Northern racism any day of the week.
Yeah. And
any
also,
day of the week, because it's at least honest. You know, it's like honest, sometimes joking, but like not funny.
I mean, but look
but
at,
like in the North, it's like, oh, I'm not a racist. I'm just actually really racist.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
but
doing
so
all these
like
terrible things,
yeah.
Like, yeah, or just like so
at,
covert.
Yeah, but look at New Orleans before the storm. I mean, you literally, let's say you have St. Charles Street,
mm-hmm.
and you have maybe two blocks after St. Charles of, okay, maybe, you know, middle,
mm-hmm.
upper middle class people or middle class people. But after that two blocks, you have straight up working class black people.
Yeah.
These rich white people had to interact with these black
people.
And
that is exactly what I was saying.
And that's New Orleans. And it was like that historically. So for us to have these now
mm-hmm.
predominantly white areas, that is not a New Orleans thing.
No, it is.
To have
not.
An area that's just white people.
No, or. No,
I could
it was
not handle
that.
Chewbacca's this year. I went to Chewbacca's and was like hanging out with like a lot of my white transplant friends, and like I had no idea because I had never been to Chewbacca's before.
It's
and
that.
I was just like, I could not deal with it. There, I saw like there, like I was like, there were literally two black children there, and I was like, what is a Mardi Gras parade if there are not black children like running around?
Is that
like,
the adult parade?
Know?
That was me at the
it's
a
walking
Star Wars parade.
Parade.
It's a
but
Star
it's
Wars
all,
walking
it's literally
parade.
All white in the Ninth Ward.
Wow.
So I just like,
well, you know,
I
they
could
have
not
a,
do
they have
it.
A,
and they were all
their brass band. That's a night walk.
Their din is on Poland around the corner from my house. Yeah. I went to that parade this year because one of my friends was in it who is black. And I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to go support Lauren or whatever. And literally 3 seconds after she was done, I was like, okay, the parade is over in my mind. Like, I don't need to be here. No, but what you were saying was actually exactly the thing I was thinking about.
Alabama. I have family who stay in like Perryville, Louisiana. But as far as like walking around the neighborhoods and seeing weird faces like that, it makes me really sad to ride through the Ninth Ward because I'm like, oh, I used to hang out with such and such in this house. And now it's a musty-ass gutter punk who lives here with their seven dogs. I'm just like, I can't. It's just really annoying also to notice the school system in this city. Just the school, the two schools that I grew up with in my neighborhood, which is William Franz, which is now Akili, and then St. Mary's of the Angels, which is not the high school, it's the elementary school, which is like a few blocks around the corner from Akili. They both, well, not the, not St. Mary's, but Akili basically looks like a prison.
And they behave.
And my grandmother, who was an English teacher in the lower ninth ward, I believe she taught middle school, she gets on the teachers actually because they make the kids walk around in single file lines. The kids walk around the neighborhood in single file lines.
I don't know if this person still works there, but apparently the principal that they had there at one point was like horribly racist.
Yeah. Yeah, my grandmother got on the man because the guy was like yelling at one of the kids and like called the kid a nasty slur. And then my grandmother, she's always one of those people where she's like, come here, young man. You don't talk to these kids like that. That's not like this, that, and the other.
Someone I know used to work there and they told me about it and they were just like, yeah, basically like I got banned from being there and like I like got fired from like a job I was working because I refused to treat the kids that way. As you should, like that's like not that's just like training kids to go
prison. Pretty much.
Like, oh yeah, charter school.
I was walking in the building like
yeah.
Because this is the prison. They have metal shutters.
The students as students, they view them as problems and usually it's like how do I get rid of the problem? How would that be sick? I work at Clark and we have like a pretty strong disciplinary code and so we have something called ISI, which is where you send someone there for like a class period. And I personally hate handing out ISI because it's like, it doesn't benefit you to like go sit in a room where I'm not actually teaching you a lesson for like this class period. But like, I once like had to go to a teacher's classroom. It's like I'm a long-term substitute teacher. It's like kind of a weird thing when I explain it right now. But anyway, I had to go to a teacher's classroom because she was like starting off a lesson or something. And literally within the first 5 minutes of class, she sent like half the class out of the room. And so, and I was like, that's crazy. Like, and like, they weren't like even doing anything that bad. And I was just like they're talking. They literally just came in for lunch. Like, they're still like having their like energy.
Yeah.
Like,
they're kids.
Right?
Yeah, they're children.
And so that happened. And then what made it particularly annoying for me is that I'd been talking to the teacher in the teacher's lounge before I went to the classroom because I was like talking about the fact that I had to go there. And she was like, oh, this class period is just like so tough because like I have these like five or six students who like aren't supposed to be in my class or supposed to be in somebody else's class. Like, they're supposed to be in somebody else's class. And they like, they just like haven't moved them yet, but they're like trouble students or like whatever, whatever. And so I go to this class and then she pretty much puts them all out. And I'm like, you decided and you like had it in your mind and your like ideas already that you did not want these kids in this classroom. So they could have came in and just blipped and you were gonna send them out. And like, that's kind of ridiculous because like how, like regardless of the fact they're going to another class, if you're teaching a skill in this classroom, then they would benefit from learning it. And it's the expectation that you're teaching them and they're learning this. Like, what are you talking about right now? And it's just like a lot of stuff. It's just like, my kids are also reckless and do really bad things sometimes and do say really bad things. So like, yeah, like they definitely need to be punished for it, but it's just like, at some point, the culture becomes just like punishment. Mm-hmm. And also, it's like never, like it doesn't actually do anything.
And also, like knowing that like people care like helps too. Like,
yeah, and that's the other thing. I'm like, if you treat the
they're
kids
so
this
rare.
Way,
the people who care are so rare, and then your jobs are in jeopardy when you like, no, I'm not gonna yell at a freaking kindergartner for not walking in a straight line, like.
Just to answer this question quickly as a foreigner.
Sorry.
As a non-native New Orleanian. It was funny because when I first moved here in 2008, I worked at a Julian Leadership Academy, which I don't know what it was before, but that was the original name. And I have a problem with that thing. Like, why don't they change the names of the schools? Can't you keep it the same name? But anyway, and it was the like lunch lady, and she just was like, why do you live here? And I was like, because New Orleans is great. It's like people trying to escape, but I came here to live, and it's just like New Orleans is an awesome place, and I used to live here when I was little for like 3 years, and it's warm, and I like the warmth. And why do I stay? I feel like when I first moved here and worked at that school, I felt like I experienced more of New Orleans, and that's what I like. Like, I always try to figure out, how do I find the regular black people? Like, the welcome, like y'all. Like, the people like y'all. Like I want, like, to go get a grandma or something, because I feel like that's real New Orleans, and I feel like what I experienced, because I work in Baton Rouge, and I'm always around white people, and it makes me question whether, like, being around white people makes me question whether Southern hospitality actually exists, because white people don't extend Southern hospitality to black people. So I'm like, does it actually exist? But when I first came down here, it did exist, because I was freaked out by having to say hi to everybody. It was weird. I mean, I got used to it, but in Detroit, we don't say hi to everybody, but I like had to psych myself up, like, okay, this person's gonna say hi to me, I'm gonna say hi back, it's gonna be normal. Stuff like that. But I need to try to find where the New Orleans black people are, because I feel like I would enjoy my time better if I found that. Because that's what I like about New Orleans.
So it's the difference between Southern hospitality and not going out your way to make white people feel comfortable. Yeah. It's like sometimes that, you know what I'm saying? Oh, like, let me show you that I'm not harmful. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
man. People say things like that, it makes me truly thankful that I was blessed with the gift when I was born of truly just not giving a fuck. I went in on this white man at the bar the other day because he was trying to tell me about African history. And
oh,
the words, hold on, I'm about to read the fuck out of here, actually came out of my mouth. I was like, who are you talking to? I was like, you're not from here, you're white as hell, and you're trying to tell me, what, sir? I was like, okay, thank you. And he was like, not even part of the original conversation, like, he like pulled up and someone else had me, and I was just like, are you lost?
You need guidance?
And I went to the directional center to actually care.
So,
the
non-native.
Well, my godparents are from Lafayette, Louisiana, and I never, like, the thing about this area that's very interesting is that it's very focused on tradition, and my story is the exact opposite of that. I never lived in a place for more than, like, 4 years. I was born in Central America, and we actually met my godparents there, who are from Lafayette, and it's always been, like, a very magical experience for me. That I get from my friends and relationships that I have here, and just building really intentional friendships. And that's the thing everywhere I go, but New Orleans is very, very specific. And I stay because, like you were saying earlier, this creative, artistic energy that is here really helps me. I've been a violinist for 17 years, and I didn't really feel like an artist until like maybe 3 years ago. I felt like more like an interpreter because I had to like play these pieces the way that they told me to. My opinion didn't really matter. And we also had to black out black history in relation to music in schools. So they make it seem like we don't have anything to do with it. So I feel like New Orleans is definitely, or not just living in New Orleans, but these past 3 years have been more so this creative journey for me.
So, I'm going to...
Next card?
This is for our artists who we have meeting at the table. Does a sense of civic responsibility affect formal decisions made in your studio? Is anyone a graphic artist? Or?
I think all art forms count.
Yeah.
What is today, the 11th?
The 12th.
mean, I...
Well, I know you.
Yeah. I struggle with, like, even calling myself an artist. Like, it depends on the day. It depends on who I'm with. It depends on, like, how I'm feeling. I have always been a visual artist and, minored in visual art in school. And then right after I graduated, Occupy Wall Street happened. I was in school in New York. And, in Occupy, there was a group called Arts and Culture, like the Arts and Culture Working Group. Because, like, Occupy had, like, all of these different working groups that dealt with different issues, like, different, like, areas that were being impacted by capitalism. So, like, there would be, like, an environmental justice working group, like, a POC working group, LGBT, like, arts and culture, all of these different things. And this collective called Occupy Museums came out of it, and we got really involved in talking about, like, how problematic art becomes and culture becomes under capitalism, because it's constantly, like, extracted from and it's turned into a commodity. Where all of the values and all the social use get drained out of it. And it's just something that, like, is like any other, like, financial instrument that is, you know, flipped on this, like, luxury market, you know, as, like, a tool for, like, for financial speculation, at least specifically in New York. In the New York art world, it's, like, really intense like that. Exactly. Right, Miami now. And it's, like, this whole culture that's being perpetuated by, or, like, you know, like, and I say culture, I mean culture of capitalism, because capitalism is a form of culture and maybe the negation of all culture. But anyway, so, like, by doing that, I was just so involved in, like, challenging museums and, like, doing actions at museums and then starting to do projects and, like, just, like, forcing conversations that people didn't want to hear. And my work kind of took on this, like, performative and, like, activist element, and I stopped feeling, like, not even comfortable making objects, but just, like, I lost, like, the inspiration to create physical objects to, like, put in the world. And it's funny because, like, I, like, now, like, I've been involved in, like, that group for, like, you know, since 2011, and now I am one of the co-founders of this group called Blights Out, which is trying to bring together, like, citizens, artists of all stripes, activists, you know, architects together to, like, tackle the, like, housing crisis in New Orleans. And I, like, finally feel, like, now that I'm, like, doing that, like, pretty much full time, like, I finally feel, like, the urge to start creating again, like, to use my, like, hands to create. But now I don't know how to get back into it. And I feel like, what could I possibly make that would feel, like, right to me? You know, that would feel like I need to do something where I'm, like, really intentionally, like, transferring energy, like, from myself into these objects and using objects that are gonna, like, transform the energy of, like, the space that they're in. Like, I can't ever look at, like, an object or, like, art for art's sake kind of again, you know?
So I'm just learning Hawaiian photography. I know there's different type of things of art. As I grow, I mean, I do take pictures of certain events, but I don't plan on taking pictures of weddings or anything. I want to do more artistic, pretty much focused photography. But even right now, I love to expose and show people the city and the people that I see and the culture that I see. Two examples, Mardi Gras Day, I was on my bike, I was going to get ready for Orleans to experience Zulu, and I was by Claiborne, and I saw something, I had to stop my bike and pull out my camera and take a picture. This is a picture of this older black man in a burgundy mink.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was just like, it was just so beautiful. It was so powerful. But it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. It was so powerful. Yeah. It's so beautiful and so powerful that I just had to capture the image. And it was just, he was just chilling in his doorway. In this burgundy mink in the hood. So it's images like that I live for. Seeing an artist not sing but connect with the music and the people and be able to capture that, because that's a moment that, you know, that when they're in that zone. I'm not just saying when they're in that zone. So there's just so many. So I do think, but also, like, Exhibit B. I always tell people Exhibit B was a very life-altering experience for me, especially the closing day, because there were so many people from so many different walks of life, white, black, whatever. But it shows, like you say, the non, how when art is not commodified and it was pushing us to think on a higher level, not just about ourselves and our past, because Brandon do a lot of history work, but how we can transform our surroundings with what we have, and not waiting on anybody else to, you know, create for us, but we can create and recreate. I mean, who would have thought an abandoned apartment complex could be a complete gallery? So it was just such a beautiful experience, and it pushed me to think even higher and stronger. And, you know, I just think that art is important. I recommend to young people not to listen necessarily to all of the commercial music that is, because I think music today is an attack on young black minds. And I think they use music to program our children by lyrics, Nicki Minaj and all that, and materialistic and what they should be focusing on, and that's not what they should be focusing on, and sex and all this. So, you know, I just think we do have to, and I think it's going on right now with Kendrick Lamar, with just seeing so many young black violinists. I've met so many of my black violinists. Like, I don't know where they are. I'm like, yes, like, play. So yeah, see Regina Carter, T-Ray. Every time I look around, I see a black violinist. I'm upset. So.
When I think of like civic responsibility, like for me, like I enjoy the plight of black people so much. Like my dream is like just, you know, kind of get back to where like everybody like doing their own thing. Like, you know, us as grown ups, like everyone's good, you know. So I think of like my civic responsibility and how that affects like my art and my art space. It's definitely super like, I only put black people in my poems. Like, I only do that. Like, I only want, I'm sorry, I'm just super like, you know. Like,
yeah, you're so, yeah. Yeah.
And still to this day, you can't walk up in the country club up in Metro. You can't just bust up in there. No.
Why would you want to?
I know, but I'm just saying, like, like any of it.
I mean, you can't
Rex.
Yeah.
Rex, yeah. You
know,
can't.
You know, I've lived my life my whole time. I haven't seen Rex Parade in like 7 or 8 years because I like waking up late and going to Orleans and just seeing some blues. But I was just like, the Rex Parade, Keith Rex, he's like the same guy every year.
So look, tell me what is up with the like Teat Rex? That like the little walking parade that's called Teat Rex. It's like Petite Rex.
I've heard about it, but I didn't see it.
It's something that's new. And it's like, but why are they trying to emulate Rex of all of the parades? Is like my question. Like who started that? Where did that even come from? And what is their agenda?
Exactly.
You know? No,
like,
you
know, it's known for being racist.
Like, it's one of those like Ninth Ward walking parades that's all white. It comes before Chewbacca's. It's new, but it's like Rex is one of the parades. It was one of the like crews that was like so segregated that they almost didn't. They were like one of the ones that almost didn't desegregate in the 90s. Like when like Momus and Comus decided to fold and go underground. Like Rex was like fine, you know, because they wanted to like stay out there.
Right.
So it's like, why would you then make a little like Rex parade? Like of all
in
the like, yeah. Why not Teat Zulu? Like what?
They're letting
you
know. They're letting you know. They put it in your face. They'd be like. Subliminal, but not subliminal. They always do that. I'm just like.
So I'm gonna get through one more card. She said 10 minutes.
Oh, I pulled this one.
Wait, I want to hear. I want to hear Michael ask the answer the.
Oh no, this is the.
No, answer that one. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. That's not right now. I was like,
I'm not gonna answer that.
You don't want to answer it?
I don't think I can.
So, this is how is cultural memory passed down to younger generations? Discuss legacy, intergenerational advocacy, and mentorship. Okay. First of all, a lot of things that New Orleanians do was cultural memory. I'm eating red beans and rice every Monday. That came when the black women only cooked. Wash, they had to wash not only their family clothes, but the white people clothes, because the black women were the main, they were the laundry first back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And on Sunday and Saturday, everybody wore their good clothes.
So they had to wash clothes on Monday. Well, you can't cook and wash clothes at the same time. So what they put on beans, let them soak all day. And that's how we eat red beans every day. Stuff like that. Or fried fish on Friday. So, but a second line is a cultural memory. A shotgun house is a cultural memory. However, I'm developing my own walking tour guide company. And one thing is, because I love history, I love explaining history in ways where people can understand it and grasp it. But understanding, knowing the importance of your ancestral connection, knowing if grandma passed down, that's important. You have to pass down, you got to teach your kids about grandma who died or uncle. Those are our ancestors, and we need to always remember them. But also knowing what is each of our ancestral assignments. Our ancestors have given us an assignment for this day, and they're working with us, and they want you to fulfill it. So not only do you have ancestral connection, but you have an ancestral assignment. And I think people need to really understand it, and that's something that we have not been taught. So mentorship, and then people, do you know who your great-grandmother is? I think you need to find out. Like, even this day, I'm going to tell y'all, I was cleaning out my parents. They live in the same apartment since Hurricane Katrina. Last year, they bought a 5-bedroom house in Texas. We was cleaning out the apartment, and I was like, my dad was in the hospital at the time, but we were still moving them. And I came across my grandfather, Wiley. This was in my grandfather, Wiley. I have carried this with me since we moved him to Texas. And he had like a picture, his like NAACP card. But I really felt closer to my grandfather. He got his cousin number, I guess in case something happened. But I literally felt closer to my grandfather since I started carrying this around. And sometimes I'm like, okay, grandfather, I need you to look out for me on this. I'm about to do this. I need you to guide me. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think we need to embrace who we uniquely are in New England. Because they've been second line. They've been second line all the way back to Congo Square. And we need to embrace that as well. Now, what I don't like is people from the outside, I understand our culture and the energy and the strong is connected.
You want to be a part of that.
But don't come in and decorate, because to me, Congo Square is special. Because I may have had an ancestor who went out on a Sunday after a long week of slaving and went and revealed their mind connected at Congo Square. So don't come and just think it's a game that you just come in and doing and making us cute. It is not. And you need to respect those spirits, because those spirits still walk among us today. And they telling us that we can, that's what it is. They're telling us, look, y'all can fight. Y'all got this. Y'all got this. And I just think we need to remember those memories and pass it down to young people. And that's why I feel so sorry for the charter schools. And because them kids, like, we had people, teachers back in the old parent school, like, who knew my mother, my father, who knew me, who knew my older brothers and sisters. Like, yeah, I taught your older sister. And those teachers cared. And they took care of us. And they should not be blamed or faulted because people at the top are stealing money from the school system.
There was something I was saying earlier about how, like, as an outsider, when people say, like, the name Lusha or McDonough 35, there's, like, this history that comes along when you start that conversation. And I'm just, like, lost, because I'm just like, okay, what is this whole background history that comes with just saying that name? And then they're changing the names of all the schools so they don't have that history associated with it anymore.
Ancestral memory, yeah.
They're trying to take it away. Same thing with Willie at Keeley. They only kept the front part of the building in brick, which is the famous steps that Ruby Bridges walked up on. But then they also, so it's the only part they kept, but the big sign says Akili. And the bigger part of the school, it looks like a prison. But they're like, this is going to keep this little
brick
part.
Been in there.
Same thing they do with the projects. We're going to keep this one little part and remind you of what it used to be. And then we're going to build something that can be blown down.